Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network out of Vancouver, and David William Perry, academic, author, and journalist out of Scotland. And thank you for staying with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Mathalu alladhina yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabilillahi kamathali habbatin anbatat sab'a sanabil kamathali habbatin anbatat سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has arrived in Sri Lanka, marking a significant diplomatic moment between the two nations. U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza still continues. And also in our headlines, U.S. campuses protests are continuing against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi has arrived in Sri Lanka, marking a significant diplomatic moment between the two nations. Raisi was welcomed by Sri Lankan officials upon arrival at the Matala Airport in Hambantota. From there, he was escorted to attend a public ceremony marking the inauguration of the Uma Oya Multipurpose Development Project. The project that includes two dams and a 120-megawatt power plant has been built by Iranian contractors. The Iranian president will then head to the capital, Colombo, for a meeting with his Sri Lankan counterpart, Ranil Wickremesinghe. A highlight of Raisi's visit will be the signing of 5 memorandums of understanding aimed at bolstering bilateral relations. His day-long trip is in response to a special invitation extended by Wickremesinghe and is the first by an Iranian president since 2007. Correspondent Gisumi Shamedi joined us in our studio to tell us more about the Iranian president's official visit to Sri Lanka.
This is the first visit of an Iranian president to Sri Lanka. It is very important in that aspect. Let's not forget that President Ibrahim Raisi took office promising that he would expand relations, international relations, not only in the region but also beyond. And now we see our president in the Far East in Sri Lanka. And not only that, he will be inaugurating a major hydropower project, including an immense dam in Uma Oya, which is considered one of the biggest projects that Iran has carried out beyond its borders. Of course, Iran has had a very impressive resume in exporting its services as far as its engineers have been constructing dams and power plants in regional countries in particular. But now we see the same thing happening in more impressive scales and major scales in Sri Lanka. So we're expecting that dam to be inaugurated anytime soon.
Over 200 days into the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the regime has intensified its attacks all across the devastated territory, killing more innocent women and children. In central Gaza, Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire keep pounding the Buraij and Nusayrat refugee camps. Several civilians have been killed and a number of others injured as a result. Elsewhere, fresh shelling hit the east of the southern city of Khan Yunis. In the north, the regime's attacks targeted Beit Lahia Stadium, killing and wounding several displaced Palestinians taking shelter there. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor has warned Israel is wiping out Beit Lahia to initiate another wave of mass displacement. The group has called for immediate international action to protect civilians there. The death toll from the Israeli genocide stands at nearly 34,200 since October the 7th. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, calls for a probe into the Israeli killings of UN workers during the regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Philip Lazzarini, speaking at a UN press briefing, said that since October, nearly 200 UNRWA work members have been killed and about 160 premises belonging to the agency have been damaged or destroyed as a result of Israel's war. He called for accountability for what he described as blatant disregard for the UN operations in Gaza. Lazzarini made the remarks a day after an independent report showed that Israel has not provided any evidence over its claim that some UNRWA members had ties to the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. The claims by Israel led to massive budget deficit as a number of the countries donating to the agency cut off their aid. Lazzarini expressed his hope that the donors will resume their much-needed contributions. Pro-Palestine sentiment is rocking the United States. Hundreds of protesters closed down Brooklyn in New York, where the U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer resides. Protesters urged Schumer to put an end to the U.S. military and financial support for Israel amid the regime's ongoing genocide. In Gaza, police forces made several arrests. The anti-war fever has also spread across the most prestigious universities in the U.S. In New York, university campus clampdown on students resulted in more than 100 arrests. In Massachusetts, gates to Harvard Yard were closed to public in an attempt to head off demonstrations. Students at MIT called on authorities to divest finances from manufacturers that sell weapons to Israel. Michigan, Minnesota, and Columbia universities also have been the scene of anti-war and anti-Israeli protests. The United States Senate has passed a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan after its earlier approval by the House of Representatives. The bill now goes to the White House to be signed into law by President Joe Biden. It allocates more than $26 billion in military assistance to Israel, defying the international outcry against U.S. military support for the regime amid the Gaza genocide. It does not include any funds for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, which is the main source of assistance for Palestinians in Gaza. Rights groups and activists have time and again slammed Washington for its direct role in the Gaza genocide by arming the Israeli regime and vetoing ceasefire resolutions at the UN Security Council. Well, as we mentioned earlier, it's been over 200 days now into the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the regime has intensified its attacks all across the devastated territory, killing more innocent women and children. Moti Abu Musab is joining us now from Deir Abala in central Gaza with more. Moti, over to you.
Yes, actually, the last night was horrific for all Palestinian civilians here in Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces intensified and ramped up the attacks against all areas of Gaza Strip. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the last attack actually claimed the lives of four Palestinian civilians after the Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike against a group of the Palestinian civilians in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. In the meantime, those attacks were intensified and continued against the northern part of Nusrat refugee camp. Ceaseless Israeli airstrikes hit those areas amid the continuous and the chronic artillery shelling that was maintained against Al-Mughraga neighborhood and Al-Zahra town, in addition to the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp. In the meantime, when it comes to Al-Burej refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes also continued their airstrikes against the residential buildings and apartments in the refugee camp. More Palestinian residential buildings were destroyed and leveled to the ground over those continuous attacks. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained also against the eastern part of Al-Burej refugee camp. Even in Al-Maghazi refugee camp, the Israeli occupation forces also continued their airstrikes and attacks against the eastern part of Al-Maghazi refugee camp. More Israeli artillery shelling actually targeted those areas, leaving and inflicting more destruction in the residential buildings in that area. Here in Deir el-Balah city, the Israeli warplanes actually carried out another airstrike against a civilian car in the center of Deir el-Balah city. At least a Palestinian civilian was reportedly killed over the attack, in addition to multiple injuries. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the eastern part of Deir el-Balah city. When it comes to Gaza city, the Israeli warplanes also scaled up their attacks against different neighborhoods inside Gaza city, including At-Tufah, Al-Shaja'iyah, and Zaytun neighborhood. Those areas were under heavy bombardments over the continuous Israeli airstrikes and the chronic artillery shelling that was maintained all the night, particularly against Al-Zaytun neighborhood. Dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings were destroyed to the ground using those Israeli airstrikes as a result of those Israeli airstrikes and the continuous Israeli artillery shelling towards those areas. When it comes to the northern part of the Gaza Strip, the current situation is still hyper-hazardous as the Israeli occupation forces renewed their intense attacks against those areas, particularly Beit Lahia city. As you know, the Israeli occupation forces demanded the people who are still there to evacuate the entire city. It is a prelude to conduct another.
All right, we're going to leave it there. That was our correspondent, Moti Abu Mosabe, joining us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Also, the Canadian city of Calgary has witnessed police clamp down on pro-Palestinian rallies held in protest of the Israeli genocide in Gaza. A key organizer of those frequent protests named Wissam Khalid has been arrested for several times by the Canadian police. Our correspondent Robert Inlakish reports from Calgary.
Since the beginning of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, Justice for Palestinians in the city of Calgary have organized weekly demonstrations, during which organizers and protesters say they have fallen victim to unfair repression from the Canadian authorities. Wissam Khalid, a leader in the local pro-Palestinian movement, described the environment in which protesters take action.
Well, we've been dealing with a lot of repression from the Calgary police ever since basically those first weeks in October. On November 5th, I was arrested for chanting "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Arrested and charged for that with a hate crime. They called it disturbing the peace for making what they called an anti-Semitic chant in public, an offensive anti-Semitic chant.
In an incident that went viral on social media, Wissam was recently arrested again by the Canadian police. But it isn't he alone who has been subjected to such ill treatment.
On November 19th, a couple weeks after my first arrest, there was a small group of protesters after one of our marches that sort of went and occupied an intersection up by McLeod Trail and 4th Avenue there. Stayed there for, I wasn't on site, but I heard it was about 5-10 minutes that they were there, and then the police basically came in to bash heads, and they actually did quite a lot of damage to people. They assaulted a 13-year-old boy, put him in hospital. He spent that night in hospital with concussion symptoms.
All this repression for what Wissam says are simple demands that are not causing harm to the public and do not warrant such measures by the police.
Well, we're supposed to have the right to free speech and freedom of assembly and the right to protest in this country. And frankly, on this issue, especially here in Calgary, that right really feels like it's been under attack from the police, from the city, from the justice ministry here when they decided to charge me. So, like, you know, especially on this issue, I mean, it's not like we're out here for nothing. We're talking about a genocide that's ongoing.
As pro-Palestinian demonstrators take to the streets across North America, they experience similar backlash over the phrase, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." In Calgary, there is no difference. Crackdowns from the police and even attempts to make the phrase itself illegal have been made. Yet, they say this does not discourage them from their actions in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Robert N. Lakesh, Calgary.
A book depicting 10 real human stories of life and resistance in the besieged war-torn Gaza has been presented at the Italian Parliament. The book was launched as the genocidal Israeli war on the Gaza Strip has entered its 200th day.
A book called The Valiant Souls of Gaza, 10 Glimpses of Light in the Darkness of a Genocide, was presented at the Chamber of Deputies of the Italian Parliament on Tuesday. The initiative was organized by five-star movement lawmaker Stefania Ascari. The book, written by Hanin Sufan, the daughter of Palestinian refugees who reside in the northern Italy city of Bergamo, features 10 stories of Palestinian unwavering resistance that have taken place in Gaza since the beginning of Israel's brutal attacks on the Strip in October last year. The book includes stories of Palestinians' tenacity and bravery in the face of Israel's lawless and indiscriminate attacks on civilians. There is the miracle story of Rim giving birth amid Gaza's devastation in the most agonizing of pains after a cesarean delivery without pain medication, or that of grandfather Khaled cradling the lifeless body of his beloved granddaughter Rim.
First and foremost, as a temporary representative of the Italian institutions, it is essential for me to give voice to the voiceless. The book features stories of Palestinian mothers, children, journalists, who incessantly talk about peace and peace only even if they are under attack. As an opposition party, we are calling on the government to recognize Palestine's statehood and to stop sending weapons to Israel.
A number of Western countries, including Spain, Ireland and Norway, are moving closer to recognize Palestine as a state. Italy has so far been a staunch supporter of Israel, providing weapons and other forms of military support to Tel Aviv. Only recently, the Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has called on the regime to halt its military operations in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Both the Genocide Convention and the Geneva Conventions clearly state that all signatories must do all they can to stop violations of humanitarian law. Italy is not doing anything to stop Israel's genocide.
Meanwhile, Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip marked its 200th day on Tuesday with no end in sight to the Israeli war that has so far killed over 34,000 Palestinians and led to a humanitarian crisis in the besieged territory. Max Civili, Rome.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea says it will continue to build the most powerful military to safeguard the country's sovereignty, security, and regional peace. The comment was made by the DPRK leader's sister, Kim Yo-jung. Also warned that the joint live-fire drills by the United States and South Korea are driving the regional security environment into dangerous turmoil. Pyongyang on Tuesday carried out its first nuclear counterattack drills to simulate its nuclear trigger management system. During the drill, the country fired several short-range ballistic missiles toward the sea off its east coast. The drill comes as Washington is enhancing its military alliance with South Korea and Japan. Pyongyang considers increasing U.S. military footprint in the region as a threat to its national security. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshipping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
The Limelight.
With Earth Day, which was on April 22nd, it is important to recall how Zionists developed myths relating to the Palestinian land. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, since October 7th, Zionists have wielded atrocity propaganda to justify genocide. Mary Terfa writes, adding, While Palestinians have shared testimony of the atrocities they have witnessed, the difference is not just in the truth of these stories, but also their function. Defined as information about the crimes committed by an enemy, especially deliberate fabrications or exaggerations, this form of misinformation has been the topic of rebuttal since the start of the war on Gaza, actually the genocide against the Gaza people. However, Zionist Hasbro or Zionist propaganda has a long history, beginning with the Nakba or catastrophe in 1948. With the Earth Day happen on April 22nd, it is important to recall how Zionists develop myths relating to the Palestinian land. As Alan George observes, prior to 1948, the Zionists sought to justify unrestricted Jewish immigration to Palestine by claiming that it was a land without a people for a people without a land. In the Americas too, European invaders perpetrated the myth of technical superiority to exterminate the original inhabitants of the land. Reappropriating notions of manifest destiny, Zionists laid their claim to what they wrongly said was barren wasteland whose original inhabitants lacked the ability to make the desert bloom. Dina Elmuti notes, "Every Zionist accusation is a confession, a worldview that relies on lies, propaganda, and manipulation, thereby ensuring that everything that is bad is projected outward onto others." Thus, when Zina Rakhmolyova says that anti-Israel activists use Israel's Independence Day to hijack the narrative and attempt to rewrite history, she's projecting what Zionists themselves have done. It is a common myth that Palestine was once vacant land. In fact, it was once the home of a thriving agricultural economy in which Palestinians produced grains, melons, and olives, to name a few. Once Zionists razed the land for highways and homes belonging to the Zionist settlers, it was declared a military zone for Palestinians, thus reducing a once flourishing people to poverty. Co-founder and CEO of Social Light Creative reiterates the myth that when Jewish immigrants returned to their land, they encountered there a barren land that was sparsely populated with few natural resources and limited water supply. Indeed, she might have copied these words straight out of Henry Nash Smith's Virgin Land, The American West as a Myth and Symbol, 1950, a seminal American studies text that ironically falls into the trap of mythologizing the West as vacant land, while at the same time pointing out the mythologies of the region that form a part of the American psyche. As the Zionist regime continues to uproot olive trees, a symbol of the rootedness of Palestinians, they are replaced by non-native pine trees, which became the quintessential symbol of Zionism. The Zionist regime's force is not only employed by violence and displacement, it is also applied through environmental damage to the land. By replacing the long-rooted olive trees with non-native, fast-growing pine trees forest, Zionists hope to sever the Palestinians' relationship to the land. Not only does this destroy the people's livelihoods and kinship with the earth, It also creates ecological devastation. Taya Amit writes, "These foreign trees often cannot adapt to local soils as they demand a lot of water, causing droughts. They also acidify the land, making the ground inedible for Palestinian shepherds to graze their flocks on, and the trees are vulnerable to wildfires, creating a situation that needs to be highlighted on Earth Day. These fires, like those in other parts of the global south, are the product of colonizers who seek to impose their own imprint on the land."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. Black and white.
In response to the countries and the nations who dare to take their destiny in their own hands, to self-government, to self-determination, to simply be independent,
a simplemente ser independientes,
the imperialist forces and the imperialist countries take different measures. One of the most perverse measures are the blockades and sanctions. Particularly those exercised by the United States, also by Western Europe, and sometimes even by some international organizations, such as the United Nations. Beware. The main function of these blockades is to try to complicate the life to the inhabitants of the countries with whom they have contradictions, and want them to change their way of thought, government, and administration. Because it seems that freedom, free trade, and self-determination does not exist for them. Of course, it doesn't exist. And they immediately take measures that in some cases have resulted in very serious issues in nutrition, medicine, and the most essential elements in some countries. That is to say, who is ultimately punished is the people who receive the sanctions.
Los gobiernos que han sido sancionados,
the governments that have been constantly sanctioned have become stronger in relation to their population.
Y han cambiado el modelo de desarrollo.
And have changed the development model in such a way that as the great Chinese leader and founder of the People's Republic of China, Mao Zedong, said, the reactionaries lift the rock in their hands to such an extent that when they hold it up, it falls off on their own feet, and the sanctions become something negative for those who have imposed them.
Y se convierten las sanciones en algo negativo para quienes la han llevado adelante. Así tenemos, por ejemplo, que...
Thus, for example, among 17 sanctioned countries with the highest number of sanctioned companies, individuals, and private entities,
particulares,
some have been strengthened to such a level, as is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which has had sanctions since 1950. The Republic of Cuba, which has had sanctions since 1960, almost total since 1962, and the Islamic Republic of Iran since 1979.
Bueno, también tenemos a Venezuela.
Well, we also have Venezuela, where we have Venezuela today that is satisfying almost 90% of its food consumption through internal production, something that has never been in history.
Los países sancionados.
The sanctioned countries, Nicaragua and Russia, strengthen their internal construction, their internal market,
su mercado interno, su industria,
their internal industry, in such a way that they advance scientifically and militarily, deepening their independence and sovereignty, which has been a setback for imperialism. It is true that a cost that had to be paid.
Es verdad que se ha tenido que pagar un costo.
And that affects the people, all the inhabitants of the country that is sanctioned. It is the madness of imperialism, that fanatic thing of subduing others through hunger.
Someter al otro por el hambre. Esto hacen los gringos.
This is what the gringos and North Americans do. This is what the Americans do. But it goes against them. Today, in the Gaza Strip, Gazans are the most sanctioned on the planet. There, not even medicines, water, or anything else is allowed to enter. Zionism and its godfather, North American imperialism, are the ones leading it. The people are wise. They persevere on the path of independence and sovereignty. The sanctions have proven to be a fiasco at the end of the day. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, para hablar desde sanciones y bloqueos.
Today, we have a guest from Italy to talk about sanctions and blockade by imperialist powers against nations, governments, and countries.
Desde Italia. Él es Fabrizio Cassari.
Fabrizio Cassari, Italian journalist and international analyst, expert in analyzing economic sanctions and punitive measures applied by capitalist powers against nations.
Capitalista a los pueblos.
Bienvenido. Fabrizio Cassari, welcome to Black and White.
A negro y blanco.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Fabrizio, desde, ubiquémonos en nuestra época desde el punto de vista contemporáneo.
At the current historical stage, what are the goals, consequences, and manifestations of these policies and sanctions by the imperialist powers?
De sanciones y bloqueos por parte de las potencias imperialistas.
La política de bloqueo y de sanciones es parte de...
The policy of blockade and sanctions is called the fourth and fifth generation war, depending on who brings it up. The modern war, which the unipolar world starts, is to simply prevent the world from becoming multipolar. In order to prevent the loss of its hegemonic role as a group, the West is increasingly using all the tools of the fifth generation war, that is, diplomacy, politics, and above all, the media and sanctions, which are the tools of this war. Sanctions today affect 17 countries with specific and selective measures and 6 countries with general measures. We must note that the type of these actions can be general or targeted at individuals. Therefore, a total of 23 countries have been targeted by unilateral, illegitimate, and illegal sanctions. We are talking about 72% of the world's population and more than 30% of the entire world's GDP. I said this to understand the size and the scope of this action. Sanctions, on the other hand, result from a clear but unfair desire to win a competition competing with products and markets. When you ban the export of a country's products and when you have the same product, you will be the only option for purchase. Furthermore, when you prevent a country from using the international transaction withdrawal system, things get more complicated. The effect of this action is not only on your target country, but also on all countries that want to do business with it. This gets even more complicated when you block a country from accessing SWIFT transactions and also block it from using the dollar currency. When a country is sanctioned, the only option left is to buy Western goods. With these conditions, the West keeps its economy in a state of addiction and says that it is the best and biggest economy. But no, the reason is sanctions. As I told you, sanctions are not a substitute for war. Many times you are told that sanctions are a substitute for war. This is a lie. Sanctions are the art of war. This should be clarified. And in the following, you will see their dire goals.
Entonces esto habría que quedarlo claro, claro. Y vamos a ver después cuáles son sus objetivos finales, ¿no?
Así es, las sanciones son parte de la guerra. Ahora bien, ¿cómo los pueblos?
Yes, that's right. Sanctions are part of the war. Now, according to the current situation that we are witnessing, the situation has changed. As we know, we see American countries that have stood up for their rights, and how the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has strengthened in science and the military sector, etc. And Venezuela has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
La propia Rusia, ¿no es cierto? Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día.
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado.
Jamás, ni uno. Ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means US sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean specifically the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources, and political identity to the West, or in fact America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Volvemos, estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Y lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, when the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they are not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to some of this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the US, the US liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera...
A stupid strategy, as you said, Fabrizio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira.
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact all, sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Telares, mucho. Y todos, al final, salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if a technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, he sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza.
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment. And this way, it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the US tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad for emergencies that can happen. Now almost all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, If I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. And they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock. And many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabrizio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. Adiós.
Adiós.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a brand new episode of your very favorite program, Muslim Lady. Well, once again, I have the honor to be your host. Asma is in here. And then, unlike the usual format of this program today, we have a traveler from planet Mars into our zone. So, Brother Abdullah is with us to help us with some interesting topics. Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
And thank you very much for being here. Maybe you are just not familiar with the rituals of this program, but in here we talk about women and everything that is related to them.
Yes.
We're here to support women and all the Muslim ladies out there who are actually the engine of the society everywhere.
Definitely.
Of course. So, as for today, we are going to have a look on some misconceptions about women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in some Western societies, they actually have these slogans and mottos about women. They talk about women's rights. And then there are also... Some counterexamples to what they say, and also we have some misconceptions about women. Like when it comes to Islam, many people regard it as a religion that would oppress women,
mm-hmm.
and they would bring some excuses, some words that are actually misinterpreted. Like, for example, women are the second-class citizens to the world, to the creation, and stuff like that. So, would you please elaborate on those stuff?
If you look at the Bible, for example, the Torah, the Old Testament, the New Testament, woman is treated in such a manner that she's not even seen as a human being, which is a topic for another day, which I don't want to indulge myself in. Within the Islamic context itself, the problem with Muslims, let's say, not Islam, is that we have a lot of culture. We try to bend Islam to suit our culture,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to women. Okay, so Islam looked at women in such a manner that no philosophers, no theologians, no any piece of literature had ever glorified women as much as Islam did. Which, like you said, she's not only the engine of life, but she is the life itself. Without her, life would cease to exist. What happened is because of that culture, so we had that culture from different countries, and you also had this male culture pre-Islam. So pre-Islam, like if... Pre-Islam, mind you, across all civilizations without exceptions, whether it is the Byzantines, the Romans, the Persians, whatever empire you want to look at, women was looked at as, I wouldn't say the words that they've used, but at least like a very, very basic creature of God. Mm-hmm. Not even sometimes maybe even cattle or sheep were looked at higher and have more value. So Islam came and changed the entire thing. Having said that, a lot of this paganism mentality managed to sneak into Islam. Mm-hmm. And based on that, a lot of ahadiths were formed. Now, if you look at some Arabic countries, until now, women, like, they meant to stay in the kitchen and not talk and not this and not that. Now, in misconception within Christianity and Judaism and also in Islam.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Sure.
Let's keep this climax, go for a break, and then we'll be back.
Absolutely.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Muslim Lady. Well, after an introduction to how the situation was centuries ago and how they viewed women, we came to the point of Christianity.
Okay, so in Christianity and Judaism, in their Bible, and also, this is the amazing thing, within some Islamic sects, that is not the Ahlul Bayt sect, but any other sect, they have this ahadith where they project women being created from the backbone of Adam, or the short backbone of Adam, to say that women are not important, women are second class, men are superior. Mm-hmm. Now, did you think that was just like something that came out of thin air? Obviously not. They were trying to build something on that. A man comes to Imam.
So from where they brought it, actually?
So this came from Christian and Jew theology.
Yeah.
And it was such an issue that this was brought to the Imams themselves. Okay? Mm-hmm. So a person comes to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says to him, I asked Abu Ja'far alayhi salam, min ayyi shay'in khalaq Allah Hawa? From where or from what did Allah create Hawa? Now, the question that comes to my mind is, why would a companion of Imam Sadiq trouble himself to go to